Well, this morning I'm going to speak from Ecclesiastes chapters 11 and 12, and I'm going to speak about certainty in God in an uncertain world. And I unfortunately plunged Graham and myself and my family into uncertainty this morning, but I'm glad that I managed to get here. What is certainty? Certainty is being absolutely sure and confident about our knowledge of something. We all want to be certain about things. We all want to be sure and confident about our knowledge of something. And we want to be certain about our education, our relationship, our health, our job, our family, our life, our death, our God, our country, etc. But we live with lots and lots of uncertainties. Currently, we are very uncertain about the future of Ethiopia due to ongoing political instability. Now, Joe and the rest are here, and I'm so glad. Yeah. Now, my uncertainty has been overcome by certainty, and we are very uncertain in Ethiopia at the moment about the future of our country due to ongoing political instability. Here, we are very uncertain about the future of Britain due to Brexit. Situations change, don't they? One moment we are certain, and the next moment we are not. Since 24th of June 2016, signs of uncertainties have been overcome. Signs of certainties have been overcome by uncertainties. The same is true in Ethiopia. Ethiopia was on the verge of civil war between 2016 and 2018. Then hope burst forth in April 2018 with the election of our current Prime Minister. He introduced sweeping and staggering reforms. The whole country was in a state of euphoria. Then, inter-ethnic violence led to the internal displacement of more than 2.5 million people. And a couple of weeks ago, as you may have heard, the Chief of Staff of the Defense Forces of Ethiopia, a regional governor, and three other officials were assassinated. Now, fear and uncertainty abound. Uncertainty abounds in the world as a whole for all sorts of reasons, such as strained relationships between major powers, global warming, and nuclear weapons. Even we Christians face uncertainties. Uncertainty is everywhere. Uncertainty is everywhere. Uncertainty originates from being ignorant about what the future holds. The writer of Ecclesiastes confirms this in chapter 11. He repeats the phrase, "You do not know." And he says in chapter 11, verse 2, "Divide your means seven ways, or even eight, for you do not know what disaster may happen on earth." And in chapter 11, verse 5, he says, "As you do not know the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything." And in chapter 11, verse 6, he says, "Even of the seeds you sow, you do not know which one will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good." It all sounds very uncertain, doesn't it? Very scary as well. But the story does not end with ignorance or uncertainty. The book also tells us that we can be certain in God. So the central idea of my sermon this morning goes like this. Although we cannot know what the future holds, although we don't often understand the work of God, although we don't have any control over our aging and death, we have certainty in God. We have certainty in God because He is the maker of everything. He is our shepherd and legislator. He is the one to whom our breath will return, and he is the just judge. What kept the writer of Ecclesiastes going, and what keeps you and me going in this uncertain world is our certainty in God. I shall come back to this central idea a little later, but let me say a few general things about the writer and his dominant view in the book. The main person who speaks in the book of Ecclesiastes is known as Koheleth, which literally means the leader of the assembly. And it is because of this that the Greek translators called the book Ecclesiastes. And the term ecclesia, as you know, is translated as church, although many people disagree with that translation because church means nothing. It doesn't have any meaning. Traditionally, the person who speaks is known as the preacher. Some translators have teacher as well. So for some, he is leader. For others, he is preacher. Still for others, he is teacher. I'll just call him Koheleth this morning. For Koheleth, life is vapor, something unsubstantial, hence futile or vain. Some would use the term meaningless. I think vapor is a good translation, but futility, vanity, meaninglessness can also describe the situation Koheleth wants to get across. Koheleth starts his book by declaring, "Vanity of vanities, vanity of vanities, all is vanity," he says. Why does he say this? Why does he paint a very grim picture of life in this world? It's not my purpose to answer these questions this morning, but it is important to mention what led Koheleth to paint this sort of picture. Ecclesiastes is one of the wisdom writings of the Old Testament, including Proverbs and Job, and some Psalms, and probably Song of Songs as well. One common element in all wisdom writings is the emphasis on pursuing and attaining wisdom for all areas of life. But they all have different internal emphases. For example, for the writer of Proverbs, wisdom and right living lead to good life. For the writer of Job, wisdom and right living are important, but even if one is wise and righteous, they will still suffer. For Koheleth, whether one is wise, wealthy, or world leader, they will still die. Koheleth is not necessarily disagreeing with others, but he is providing a different perspective. He seeks to educate his readers that although God has put eternity or a sense of past and future in their minds, their journey in this life will not continue into eternal kingship, into eternal wealth, or eternal wisdom. But rather, their journey in this life will end with death. To think otherwise is futile, vanity, and meaningless. So in my view, Koheleth predominantly is not saying that toil, wealth, wisdom, knowledge, greatness, pleasure, or human pursuit of all that life offers in this world per se is vapor, futile, meaningless, vanity. For Koheleth, it is not wrong to justly accumulate wealth, to apply wisdom in all areas of life, to display great leadership skills, and to enjoy food and drink and all that life offers. They're all God's gift to be used at the right time, at the right place, in the right way, and for the right reasons. They are to be used with full understanding that we are all under God's scrutiny. But to think and act as if death is not a reality is vanity. To think and act as if meaningfulness of toil, wealth, wisdom, and any societal role depends only on continuity of life in this world is futile. That sort of thinking is chasing after the wind or trying to catch mist or vapor. Like many of us today, Qohelet's audience must have had a weak sense of mortality. If you are like me, we are not consistent in terms of having a weak or strong sense of mortality. I don't always have a strong sense of mortality, but when I face illness and end up in hospital or a loved one dies, I do. When I had two types of malaria at once, when I faced an ongoing medical examination a couple of years ago, when a very close friend had a massive stroke and died within 12 hours, when my mother-in-law battled with cancer since 2015 and recently lost the battle, my sense of mortality becomes stronger. You might have had the same experience. Qohelet tells me and you that we all exist between two poles, the poles of birth and death. Ever since we were born, we have been journeying towards death. He tells us that we will all die one day, and that our assessment of life should not be based on the thinking that the sort of life we live in this world will continue. For some of us, the present life may be a comfortable life, but for many of us, it may be a life full of struggles and uncertainties for all sorts of reasons. As we live between the two poles of birth and death, we study, we work, we marry, we have children, and we travel, etc. But we do all this in a world that is uncertain. Recently, Joe, my wife, and I celebrated our 12th wedding anniversary. 12 years ago, Joe and I made a decision to step into a world that we had very little knowledge about. We began a journey that was at once exciting and uncertain. Looking back, I can say that we had certainty only in two things: our God and our love for one another. We come from two different backgrounds. Joe comes from a background where certainty is needed to take any step, whereas I come from a background where certainty is not a necessity because it is not often possible. Nowadays, there are some preachers in Ethiopia who tell people what the future holds. They call it prophecy, but it is often false prophecy. These preachers claim that they know God's mind and they can twist his arms, but they don't know. Even in Britain, certainty is not always possible. It's always demanded, of course, as people want to be certain about their tomorrow, which includes the weather. Now, Jeremy Hunt and Boris Johnson have to provide Conservative membership with some certainty, so they try. But we all know that certainty cannot always be achieved. There will always be uncertainty about Britain's political and economic future in Europe and in the world. So neither Hunt nor Johnson can tell us with absolute certainty about the situation Britain will be in beyond 31st of October 2019. So uncertainty. And uncertainty creates anxiety, which affects us psychologically and physiologically. For Qohelet, uncertainty is caused by a number of things. I want to mention only three of them. The uncertainty is caused by lack of knowledge and about what the future holds. And uncertainty is caused by lack of understanding of the work of God, and it is caused by lack of control over aging and death. So first, uncertainty is caused by lack of knowledge about what the future holds. In chapter 11, verses 1 to 6, he uses different metaphors to describe this. In verse 1, he says, "Send your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will get it back." And some translations have, "Cast your bread." And NIV helpfully has, "Ship your bread," it says. Kohelet probably is talking about a commercial venture. He is saying, take a chance. Take a commercial risk of sending or shipping your bread over the waters, because you may get a profit after a while. But it is an uncertain venture, because the vessel may encounter a heavy storm and sink, resulting in the loss of the whole shipment. But Kohelet advises his readers to divide their portion or means 7 or 8 ways because of the unknown disaster. NIV tries to help us again by talking about investing in 7 or 8 ventures. I don't think Kohelet had the idea of stock market portfolios in mind, but his point is clear. He is saying, do not put your eggs in one basket, because the future is uncertain. In verses 3 to 6, Kohelet uses farming metaphors of sowing and reaping in relation to wind, clouds, and rain. I come from a farming background. I used to work like that before. Farmers in our community are dependent on the direction of the wind and the nature of the clouds and rains to make their farming decisions. But there is always uncertainty, so they are faced with risky decisions. So was Kohelet. So are we in our diverse walks of life. So uncertainty is caused by a lack of knowledge about what the future holds in relation to our life in this world. Secondly, in chapter 11, verse 5, Kohelet tells us that this uncertainty derives from not knowing the work of God. He strengthens his argument by referring to our lack of knowledge about how the fetus becomes a living being. Despite the knowledge we have gained from science, most miscarriages remain unexplained. Also, there is no agreement as to when the fetus should be regarded as a human being. That shows that much of human conception and birth remains a mystery. So pregnant women, like farmers in my community, live with uncertainty. The reason for Kohelet is because they don't know the work of God, who makes everything. In chapter 3, verse 11, and chapter 8, verse 17, Kohelet utters these amazing words. God has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into human heart. Yet human beings cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. And in chapter 8, verse 17, he says, "Then I saw all the work of God, that human beings cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. However much human beings may toil in seeking, they will not find it out. Even though a wise man claims to know, he cannot find it out." Lack of understanding of the work of God in this world causes uncertainty. Thirdly, uncertainty is caused by our lack of control over aging and death. In chapter 12, verse 1, Kohelet says, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years draw near when you will say, I have no pleasure in them." Here the journey from youth to the days of trouble is clear. The phrase "days of trouble" refers to aging. I now feel that those days of trouble are catching up on me. When I was younger, I did not have grey hair. Even worse, I could play a 90-minute football match, sprint run, and walk 50 to 60 kilometers in one day. Sadly, I cannot do that, all that now. I'm getting older, and I have no control over my aging and weakness. An Ethiopian, you might not think that. An Ethiopian church leader used to refer to aging as illness. He would say, aging is an illness for which no medicine will be discovered, he would say. And he was comforting himself in a way. He did not like aging at all, and nor do we like it, because it limits us. Qohelet uses even more frightening images in verses 2 to 5 about, for example, legs bending, teeth falling, eyes weakening, ears going deaf. Then in verse 7, he says, and the dust returns to earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. The reality of aging, weakness, and death is very close to home for all of us. It was close to home for my family 2 years ago when my father-in-law died, and recently when my mother-in-law died. We cannot ignore the reality of aging, illness, and death, nor can we deny that this reality creates uncertainty in life. So what should we do? We must continue to hold on to our certainty in God. 2 years ago, certainty was a buzzword in this country, and we were here. Theresa May often used it. Many others, including the governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, used it. In the world of politics, certainty primarily is in a stable system of governance and strong economy. Indeed, certainty in the world around us is primarily in things and beings which are tangible, visible, and scientifically provable. But it is different in the world of Christianity. In the world of Christianity, certainty primarily is in God, who is not tangible, who is not visible, who is not scientifically provable. How can I say this? Christianity is a faith based on the revelation of God through His Word and His world. As Paul says, what can be known about God is plain to us because God has revealed it to us. So how? First, through the revelation of His decreed will in the Scriptures. Secondly, through the coming of God into the world of humanity and His demonstration of His ultimate love in and through Christ. And thirdly, through creation. As Paul says in Romans chapter 1, verse 20, ever since the creation of the world, His eternal power and divine nature, invisible though they are, have been understood and seen through the things He has made. So we are certain in God because we have responded positively to the revealed truth about God's legislated will, His redemptive love, and His creative power and divinity. In Ecclesiastes chapters 11 and 12, there are four reasons why we can have certainty in God. The first reason is in chapter 11, verse 5 again, God is the one who makes everything. The work of God is at once mysterious and immensely beautiful. As the psalmist in chapter 139 says, the knowledge of the work of God is too wonderful for us and so high that we cannot attain it. Like Qohelet in chapter 11, verse 5, the psalmist thinks about his own conception and birth and says, I praise you, Lord, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. If the certainty of any of you is shaken this morning, consider the universe and look at yourselves. Think about the sun that provides energy from which plants generate oxygen, without which we cannot live. Think about our kidneys that filter 180 liters of blood per day. Neither of these could be attributed to chance. rather makes sense to attribute them to the superintelligent being, who for us Christians is God. The God who created this amazing universe also created you and me in truly amazing ways. The God who sustains this amazing universe also sustains you and me amazingly. It is not always easy, it is not always possible for us to understand how God works in this world and how he works in our lives as well. It wasn't easy for Kohelet either. But he acknowledges God as the one who makes everything, who makes everything beautiful in its time. He encourages us to remember our Creator before we are unable to do so due to aging and death. So let's hold on to our certainty in God the Creator. Secondly, we have certainty in God not only because he is our Creator, but also because he is our Shepherd. In 12:11, the writer of Ecclesiastes talks about the collected sayings that are given by one shepherd, who is God. The collected sayings are words of wisdom given by God through whose people like Solomon. God shepherds his people through his wisdom, which in Greek is Sophia. Joe and I named our daughter Sophia because we had both come to appreciate through the ups and downs of life that God's wisdom is far better and greater than ours. As the psalmist says, the Lord is our shepherd. We shall not want. He makes us lie down in green pastures. He leads us beside still waters. He restores our souls. He leads us in right paths. Even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we fear no evil, for our shepherd is with us. Hallelujah. So let's continue to have certainty in our great and loving shepherd. Third, we can have certainty in God not only because he is our creator and our shepherd, but also because our breath returns to him. 12:7 reads, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the breath returns to God who gave it. This passage refers to Genesis chapter 3, verse 19, where God says to Adam, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. It also refers to Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, where Adam became a living being through the breath of life, which is God's breath, which sustains God's creation, including me and you. We exist not only because of the functioning of our body or our organs, such as kidneys, liver, and lungs. We exist because of God's life that we contain. The life Adam received was disfigured and corrupted, but Jesus reformed and renewed it. He reformed and renewed it through the life-giving Spirit. When our time ends in this world, that life continues in the divine dimension. This is described traditionally as life after death in heaven. Tom Wright talks about life after death. His emphasis is on the resurrection as second stage post-mortem life, which is being bodily alive again in the period of being bodily dead. After a period of being bodily dead. And Wright's formula, this life after life after death, doesn't take into account the eternal breath of life. However, one describes life beyond death, one thing is certain. God has given us his breath of life so that we continue to exist beyond death. Some people say that they're not interested in living beyond death. They may have different reasons for that, but like Kohelet, I'm interested in life beyond death, and I'm sure you are interested in life beyond death, and believe that my life belongs to God. And we believe in life beyond death because of the resurrection of Jesus. So let's live in the certainty that there is life beyond death, and that we will continue to live with God in whatever form that may be. Finally, we can have certainty in God, not only because He is our Creator, He is our loving Shepherd, and we have assurance that we will continue to live with Him even beyond our death, but also because he is our just judge. In 11:9, Qohelet says to a young man who he encourages to pursue his interests in life and enjoy them, "Know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment," he says. In 12:4, he says, "For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." Some people don't like the idea of God being judge. I don't think many of us enjoy being in an earthly courtroom facing human judges. I don't know how many of you have experienced that, and we don't like it, let alone being in the heavenly courtroom with God as judge. And I visited a courtroom once in Ethiopia as a witness. I can tell you that I did not like it at all. I did not enjoy the experience of facing a judge and being cross-examined by lawyers. We may not like the idea of having a divine judge watching us, but we have to come to terms with the idea that God is not only the universal lawgiver, He inspects our actions as well. I regard the whole world as a big courtroom where all our decisions and actions are scrutinized by God. One of the beauties of Christianity is, I'm sure you know this term, it's eschatology or end time perspective. In the end, we say, in the end, God, whom we know as the Creator, the life giver, and the loving Shepherd, will act as the just judge. Many of us may feel that there is so much unfairness in our world today. I was hearing that during prayer time. But Qohelet calls us today to renew our certainty that God in the end will bring all into just judgment. So friends, we all face uncertainty in life. We don't know what our future holds. We don't often comprehend how God works in this world and in our lives. We don't have any control over our aging and death, although some people claim that they have control over their aging. But we have certainty in God because He is the maker of everything, including us. He is the loving Shepherd. He is the one to whom our breath will return. And He is the just judge. As Tom Wright said, God is God. Relax. God is God, and we are only human beings. Now with me, let's bring all our uncertainties before God. We will listen to a song called "God is God" by Stephen Curtis Chapman. When the song finishes, I ask Pastor Graham to close in prayer. Thank you.